Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
Popeye's biscuit category today, Hickey. Where if I ate a Popeye's biscuit today, they may be putting me in a different weight class, because the dinner I had last night was absolutely gluttonous. We had Indian food, and it was just absolutely delicious. Had some lamb vindaloo. There was an enormous piece of carrot cake as well that was handed out with dessert. Bunch of other dishes as well. But I woke up this morning, and I was in some pain. Like, I'm playing a little bit hurt today on CBS Sports Radio, Hickey. And then I did go over to Starbucks, and I devoured a cold brew. And that did not do wonders for my stomach as well. I had a little wrap today. It was an egg white wrap with spinach and feta cheese from Starbucks. And if you're keeping score at home, and I'll keep this PG-13 for everybody, that went right through the system, Hickey. So don't give me a Popeye's biscuit today, or I'm going to be in some big-time problems.
Yeah, sounds like you got a lot going on, so we do not want to add to that at all.
That was an awkward transition to you for you.
A little bit. So there's
tummy troubles for Zach Gelb today.
Maybe your body is overreacting to the food you ate last night. Let's see how your brain reacts to some statements.
Some could say it's a proper reaction, though. It's like you had to be realistic what you were getting yourself into. I think my body knows. I eat generally pretty healthy Monday through Friday when I am at home and I'm on the road the last 2 days in Colorado visiting some family. So I think my body said to me, oh, you usually don't eat this way Monday through Friday. We usually expect the gluttony to happen on the weekend. And I think I threw my body off, and my body is fighting back with me today.
Also, too, I'm sure you're not used to eating, at 8:30 or 9 o'clock local time?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Like, I do reverse. I usually do what most people call dinner as my lunch. I have the big meal for lunch just because the hours we work. And then my lunch will be more so dinner for normal people just because of the hours. Like, we get off the air at 10. And I don't usually, I've been trying to be better about this. Like, I'll get a salad here and there before the show. But a lot of times I'll have a big, fat lunch. And then afterwards for dinner, I'll kind of keep it light with just a protein shake and then go right to bed. So, yeah, my body is not used to eating food like that in a full meal, which would be 10 o'clock on the East Coast, but 8 o'clock out here up in the mountains.
Well, you're playing hurt, and we respect that. You're out here. Jordan flu game is going on.
All righty, what do we got?
All right, so first thing here is with the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, this offseason, a big move was made. They traded Aaron Rodgers. Now we're going to go to Jordan Love at quarterback. Aaron Jones, though, despite the quarterback change, said this team is not in a rebuild. They are here to compete. So overreaction or proper reaction, you agree with Aaron Jones that the Green Bay Packers this season, despite having Jordan Love at quarterback, are not in a rebuild.
Let me just ask you this, Hickey. When you think of a rebuild, you think of a team that's going to be like, at best, 4 or 5 wins, and they have no shot to make the playoffs, and they're in a big-time transition period where they're probably like 3 years away from actually competing for something, right?
Yeah.
I feel like some of those things do apply, some, to the Green Bay Packers, but when I look at the overall totality of the team, Jordan Love has been there for the last 3 years. Now, we really haven't seen him play because Aaron Rodgers was there. Aaron Jones has been paid. Assuming the offensive line could stay healthy, you have two studs in Bakhtiari and then also the left guard as well, Elgton Jenkins. So you got some pieces on that team where down the stretch, Christian Watson looked really good. Jaire Alexander is a tremendous cornerback in this league. Kenny Clark, I still call him underrated as a defensive lineman. because he's absolutely tremendous year in and year out. And I don't think the Packers are going to be this embarrassing, pathetic football team. I look at the Packers really anywhere from the bottom being 7 wins this year to the ceiling being 10. I think it's going to be right in the middle where there'll be an 8 or maybe even 9 win team, especially in an NFC that is not all that great. Outside of Philadelphia and San Francisco, what else does the NFC have that you love? Dallas, you don't love. Minnesota, you don't love. Detroit, we want to love them, but you don't love them. Seattle, good team. I'm optimistic on them, but you don't love them. So it's not crazy to say that Green Bay sneaks in as a 7th seed. Or maybe you have Minnesota fall back and you have the Lions not meet expectations. And I think there's a minuscule chance they could win the division in Green Bay. I'm not expecting it. I expect it to be either Detroit or Minnesota. But it's not like those two teams are both a lock to be these tremendous football teams this year. So part of me goes, I can understand why a lot of people believe it's a rebuild because it's something totally new with the quarterback. But you look at that team, I don't think they're that far away. It all just comes down to, can Jordan Love in year one give you confidence as a starting quarterback? And that's the big unknown. So when you ask me, Aaron Jones says the Packers are not in a rebuild, is that an overreaction or proper reaction? I think that's a pretty fair reaction coming from Jones being in that locker room, being one of those leaders and one of those veterans on that team. So I'll go proper reaction. I like the mentality of Aaron Jones as well. Where do you lie on that, by the way?
I would agree.
I think that's a tough one.
I look at more of a rebuild of, like, are you shedding players? Like, are you getting basically accumulating draft picks? You're getting anyone that can play off your team and not competing to win. That's, I guess, more how I would look at a rebuild. And the Packers are not doing that. They're retaining talent, obviously, outside Aaron Rodgers. But they're still going into this year trying to win.
Yeah, like you look at the Texans, whatever they've been doing the last few
years.
That's a rebuild post Deshaun Watson.
Cardinals may have no choice.
Yeah, well, the Cardinals, they're rebuilding. They just can't find a way to get a deal done for DeAndre Hopkins. And if Buda Baker just didn't recently sign a contract and they can't just give away everybody that just recently signed contracts, he would probably be out of town as well. You look at Miami a few years ago, like they were gunning for the number one overall pick. So there are teams that when you look at a rebuild, they fit that mold with the way that we've seen those teams be the last few years. If the Packers are picking in the top 5 of the draft, Hickey, or even the top 10 of the draft this year, I would be pretty surprised. So that's why it's tough for me to say that they're rebuilding. They're just adjusting at the quarterback position to having a Hall of Famer, a great player, a guy that's been there for so many years, and now it's okay. Can this next guy be competent in year one as the starter? If he's competent, there's no reason why this team can't be right in the mix to contend for that final wild card spot in a weak NFC.
Speaking of looking for competent quarterback play, that's basically exactly what the 49ers have been doing for the last few years now, and they have their own kind of quarterback carousel going on. So we got 3 guys now in the mix for the starting job for week one. Trey Lance, and so far Kyle Shanahan said he has the right attitude going to this offseason. They have traded for, I should say signed, Sam Darnold, who has, according to reports, a lot of talent, arguably maybe the most talented quarterback the 49ers have ever had.
That's not according to reports. That's according to one person's opinion.
One
in
reporter.
Matt Maioka. Yeah. Please.
So you have that being thrown out there for Sam Darnold, and obviously
Brock
Purdy.
Matt, but that's a definition of jackassery in an organization that has had Joe Montana and Steve Young. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
And speaking of those two gentlemen, this final quarterback has been compared to both in Brock Purdy, who started 5 games last year and helped get helped get the 49ers.
Where
over
the heck
the
did
hump.
That one come from?
I don't know.
The
My
Mets.
Brain is weird sometimes.
It's fried?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Maybe you're not cleaning your cabeza, actually, in that shower when you send out all those crazy videos that you've been posting the last 2 days from the shower on your Twitter.
Conditioner's not working. Not working good enough.
Maybe you're losing a few brain cells. I don't know what you're doing in that apartment.
Brock Purdy is out there, but he is coming off of off-season surgery, although Kyle Shanahan did bring up a positive report that so far he is progressing well. So overreaction or proper reaction? Out of those three quarterbacks able to start week one, Brock Purdy will be the 49ers week one quarterback.
The only way he isn't is if he's not ready from a health standpoint. He's supposed to start throwing the football, they said, earlier, and he's in front of the rehab schedule coming up. I believe it was June 2nd is what they said the other day. So Purdy starting week one, it's starting to look like he's going to be healthy. So, yeah, that's the proper reaction. This team has given up on Trey Lance. There's one each and every offseason, there is a media darling at the quarterback position where a guy who sucks starts to get made out to be, oh, in this next opportunity, in this next chapter, he's going to revitalize his career and he's going to be a rejuvenated person. Last year, that nonsense was with Mitch Trubisky, where people were like, oh, now he's with the Steelers, a really good organization that know how to help out the quarterback. Watch out for Mitch Trubisky. Yeah, they really believed in Mitch so much, the bust that he's been, that they ended up drafting Kenny Pickett in the first round, and Mitch Trubisky was just a placeholder for whatever reasons. In stupid fashion, the Steelers just didn't think he was ready, which I think that was just more so apprehension and them just being afraid to play the kid week one. And that's what Sam Darnold is. Sam Darnold was trash with the Jets. Sam Darnold was horrible with the Carolina Panthers. He does not give you enough tangible moments. So this push to make Sam Darnold potentially the starting quarterback this year, and that Sam, the third time, is finally going to be a charm. If you're saying that, as Vinny Viola just said to me, I want to know what you're smoking. I want to know how you're working out. I want to know what you're drinking to get into that state of mind and that mindset that Sam Darnold's going to be this big-time successful quarterback. And I get it. This is a loaded team in San Francisco, but they don't want him to be the starter. I don't care what Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch say. They want it to be Brock Purdy, and as long as Brock Purdy is healthy, he will be the starter week one. So you ask me, Brock Purdy will be the starter week one. It looks like he is good from a health standpoint, being able to throw the ball. The season doesn't start to September, so I will say that's a proper reaction.
Earlier this week, Jets head coach Robert Saleh said every year teams go in with the goal to win a Super Bowl, but realistically...
Hey, by the way, have we been pronouncing that name wrong the entire time?
Robert Saleh?
I say Saleh, too. I was listening. I'll keep the name of the podcast off the air because I like these guys. I was listening to a podcast today. My brother-in-law is a big podcast listener, and he loves listening to all these sports podcasts that are out there. And it's funny because I'll tell you off the air, we've had this person on the show before, and I really do like this person. But I heard this person today say, referring to the Jets as Robert Saleh. Like, I've never heard that pronunciation there. He called him Saleh. So I was wondering if we just got this wrong the entire time.
I thought my pronunciation was right.
That's the way that I call it, Robert Saleh. He said Saleh.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with what I know.
And this is a pretty credible football mind, so maybe it was just a little misspeak. And I think we've all done that, where we've mispronounced things from time to time. And maybe it's just the way that, you know, that person just speaks and he can't say Saleh. But when I heard Saleh, I was like, did he just say Saleh? I'm like, I've never heard that pronunciation for Robert Saleh. But, hey, maybe we've been getting it wrong all these years.
I hope not. It's a lot of... wrong name calling I've been saying, then that's a lot of redo. But if at least if we're right in Robert Saleh, he said this week 6 to 8 teams realistically can win the Super Bowl this year, and he believes the Jets are in that group of 6 to 8 teams. So overreaction or proper reaction, the New York Jets this year are a Super Bowl contender.
So I usually like that line of thinking, putting that number at 6, but I usually divide 3 in the AFC, then 3 in the NFC. I can't get to 3 in the NFC. So I'm only going to say heading into this season, because you still have to go through your conference to get to the Super Bowl, that where we currently sit right now, I only believe there's 5 Super Bowl contenders. And those 5 teams to me, right now today, on May 25th in the year of 2023, and this is not an earth-shattering take, it's Kansas City, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Philadelphia. I'll hold my nose because I don't believe in their quarterback position, but they're constantly there year in and year out. Also San Francisco. Outside of those 5 teams, I don't really look at any other team and go, I expect them to be in a Super Bowl this year. Now, that doesn't mean they can't get there, but right now I think the Jets are behind those 3, and I usually like to keep it to 3 teams a conference. In the NFC, I can't even give you that third team. Like, I could tell you I think is the third best team, but I then can't expect them to get to a Super Bowl this year. So when you ask me if the Jets are a Super Bowl contender, I go, that's an overreaction right now. If you're a Jet fan, you should think that you're a Super Bowl contender, but I just have a tough time believing that Aaron Rodgers, all his shortcomings in the postseason, even though his team, you could make a case, is slightly better than the team that he had last year, and I do think it is a better team that he had last year, is now all of a sudden going to be off to the Super Bowl, because when he had the number one overall seed in a weaker division, in a weaker conference, he had that twice of recent memory at home at Lambeau Field, and his team in the second half up against Tampa did not get the job done when Brady was trying to give you the game back and up against the 49ers a few years ago. In that second round, they had one touchdown drive right out of the gate, and they were horrible after that on the offensive side of the ball. So I do not view the Jets as a Super Bowl contender right now. I view them as a very, very good team, but a Super Bowl contender to me is a great team, and I don't view the Jets as a great team right now.
The Ravens will look to pass the ball more on offense. Lamar Jackson is one that is one who I should say is very excited for that. He said he can't wait to throw the ball deep, and running only gets you so far, was his quote earlier this week when asked about a pass-first offense. Lamar Jackson's career high in passing yards, 3,100 for a season. Overreaction or proper reaction? This season, Lamar Jackson will throw for at least 4,000 yards.
Yeah, I just had some jackass tweet me, and this is a guy that tweets me all the time and says how much he hates the show, and he tweeted me saying that I'm too much of an East Coast bias type of show because we spend 5 minutes having a fun conversation about Aaron Rodgers and how he's never seen The Sopranos, and this guy, he shows you how much of a clown he is that he's never seen The Sopranos as well. So whoever this clown is that's tweeting me, I will make a West Coast comparison here. When talking about the Lamar Jackson situation, this Lamar Jackson conversation right now, saying he wants to throw the ball for 6,000 yards this year, which is crazy, and also talking about how they want to throw the football more and more and more, is very similar to what you heard from Deebo Samuel last year with the San Francisco 49ers, when with Deebo Samuel, he got paid, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, I don't want to run the football that much. I want to really just catch the football and be a traditional wide receiver. When you look back at the 49ers season last year, you saw him go back to the player that got him the money. And I do think Lamar Jackson is a better thrower of the football than what people give him credit for. But his legs and his ability to run is what makes him so feared. So they could pass the ball a little bit more, but I don't think it's going to be by this drastic scenario where all of a sudden you're going to, like, in a huge way, alter the game plan of one Lamar Jackson, where he's looking like a totally different quarterback. Because they just paid him a lot of money to do what Lamar Jackson has done the last few years, about got him a unanimous MVP. So when his career high is 3,100-something yards, for you to then say, oh, he's going to get to 4,000 this year, yeah, they'll throw the football more, but I don't think it's going to be to a level where he's throwing for 4,000 and still finding a way to rush for almost 1,000 yards or 800 yards as well. Maybe it's 3,500. Maybe it's like 3,400. It slightly goes up past his career high, but to get to 4,000, I think that's a big reach, and it'll be a drastic change of the way that the Ravens conduct their offense side of the ball, even with Monken in there now after they did get rid of Roman. So you ask me, Lamar Jackson will throw for at least 4,000 yards. I will go overreaction.
All three rookie quarterbacks now for the first time this week practicing with the full team. Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson getting reps with the vets. Young and Stroud both starting with the second team, while Anthony Richardson was splitting first team reps with Gardner Minshew. Overreaction or proper reaction? All three, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, will be starting week one.
So Bryce Young's backup quarterback is Andy Dalton. Davis Mills is right now the backup quarterback in Houston. Like I'm talking about if these guys start week one. And for Anthony Richardson, it's Gardner Minshew, right?
Gardner Minshew.
I think one of those teams will be like the Steelers last year, where they're afraid to throw their future to the Wolves right away, and they'll wait a few weeks, which is really stupid. All three of those guys should be starting, but I think at least one team will be an outlier. I'll play the odds there. So when you ask me all three of those quarterbacks will be starting week one, I will go that's an overreaction.
And finally, Jimmy G with his new team, the Raiders, not at OTAs, not because he's skipping it, but because he's rehabbing. Josh McDaniels divulged today that Jimmy G had surgery on his foot back in March, and right now a timetable for his return is unknown. Overreaction or proper reaction? You are concerned about Jimmy G's foot injury.
So this was back in December when he suffered the injury when he was with the 49ers. And that's what led to Brock Purdy getting back onto the field and getting onto the field. And then after that, the Niners told him he didn't need surgery. And then he goes and takes the physical and they do the medical exams with the Las Vegas Raiders. And they're like, oh, we actually think you need surgery. I don't think this is a big deal because they expect him to be ready by the start of training camp. So I'll say this a proper reaction, but if we get to training camp and he's not ready, then that is a cause for concern. Because you look at that contract, even though they just guaranteed him a lot of money, it's easy to get out of that contract after 1 year with $45 million of it guaranteed, and it's only being a three-year deal. So if he's not ready for week one and there's a big setback here, you wonder about his long-term future. But right now, I'm going to do something that maybe I shouldn't do. I'm going to give the Raiders the benefit of the doubt. And I'm going to believe them when they say they expect him to be ready by the start of training camp. That's a little overreaction, proper reaction. OTA edition is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. I was reading earlier today, per Sham Sharania, that LeBron James played the last few months of the season with a torn tendon in his foot that could need surgery this summer. So we've been talking about this LeBron James foot injury for a while. Now you find out that he had a torn tendon in his foot. And that's going to be massive if he needs surgery or not, because I kind of go one way and then another way on this. Like, one way, you could look at it and go, okay, it makes sense, even though he's 38 and his body has been breaking down with a bunch of injuries in Los Angeles. Even though LeBron gave you a really special game four performance that unfortunately did result in a loss, you look at LeBron, there were times in the playoffs this year where he looked old. He looked like he lost a step, where he's still better than 90, 95% of the league. We still know he's a top 10 player in the sport, but there were times throughout the postseason where he did things that usually never see him do, whether it was having a wide open chance to put the ball in the hoop and then fumbling it out of bounds, him settling for all those three pointers where for years and years, you would know that LeBron James 9 times out of 10 would be driving full force to the basket. And you look at him throughout this series, even though it was a quick 4 games, he did look tired at times. And I have to imagine, sure, he's 38. Sure, he's played in the league 20 years, and it's really more than 20 years with all the playoff games that he's played when you look at it from a year standpoint in basketball. But it looked like there was something off, and you still got to see how fantastic of a player that he is. So that's like one way where I go about it. Okay, now you find out what the injury is. Now it makes sense why you started to see him slow down a bit. Then he'll be okay, and you'll get a better version of LeBron James next year. But then the other part of me goes, he's 38. He has 20, probably more years of wear and tear on that body in this league. Getting surgery at 38, you'll wonder, depending on the severity of the surgery, how long is the rehab? How long does LeBron start to get back to himself? And does he lose a step permanently at the age of 38, eventually going to be 39? And will he ever have that explosiveness and just that dominance that we've seen LeBron for the last 2 decades? So I'm kind of torn on this, Hickey, because when you were watching LeBron during this postseason, yeah, you could chalk a little bit of it up to age, but for the most part, you knew that something was wrong. Then you get that news today that he has a torn tendon in his foot. But then if he needs surgery, you know, is he able to get back into dominant form? Is he able to be someone that we've seen for so many years, continue that for like another year or two? Or is this surgery going to be like the start to the end, the beginning to the end of the career of LeBron James, where he's back, he could still be a really damn good player, but he's not going to be that explosive as we've known and as we've witnessed for the last better part of two decades.
I think especially in the playoffs, what we saw, I would still equate most of that to age, especially the fatigue. Like, that's just exhaustion.
Not the injury, though?
No. Because the injury is not going to impact your cardio and your wind.
But that injury, if you're dealing with the torn tendon in your foot, you're going to have to exert so much more energy to get through that pain and maintain that pain tolerance where you're kind of losing a step because of just the construction of your body and what happened with this injury.
Right, and that has, I think, a little to do with it. But again, when he's kind of like, we saw him like basically leave it all on the court. I think that's a lot of age 38, about to be 39, and playing, when you add in the playoff games of 280-something, 3.5 extra seasons, we're talking about a guy that's going on year 24. Like that Father Time is undefeated. And at that point in your career, we kind of saw Tom Brady too, where could he have played another year or two, Tom Brady? Sure. But you see the gradual decrease where they both, to their credit, have not dropped off a cliff like we've seen so many great players do. They're
right,
still
Max
playing
Kellerman.
Insanely well for their age, and especially for LeBron, where you're seeing him do things that we have never seen anyone anywhere near his age bracket do. But at a point, it does come where age does catch up to you in the sense of exhaustion like we saw, in the sense of not getting to that gear that we're used to LeBron James getting to in the playoffs. I think a large part of that still more is age and the miles on his tires compared to the foot injury he was playing through.
Now, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just think both could actually be true here. And I just wonder which one is more true. And until we see this consistently with LeBron, where he's huffing and puffing in the fourth quarter, and you know that he's just absolutely exhausted. And maybe I'm being naive here, and maybe it's because I'm a huge Brady fan and we never saw Brady really fall off at all. I'm going to kind of expect that LeBron's going to be okay with this surgery, but I do also then wonder if he gets the surgery, is he ever able to get back to that explosive form? Because when you're 38, 39, it's tougher and tougher to recover and recover quickly and go back to playing like you were not even 20, 25, 28, but like 35, 36. And we're talking about then 3-4 years ago from where he currently is. So I'm fascinated, and you don't really need to see it in the regular season. It's more so what LeBron will look like in the postseason next year. But it is clear that his body is telling him that the end is near. Because for how many years, how often did we talk about LeBron never really succumbing to the load management? And LeBron, whether you love him or you hate him, you could always respect how he played every game. And a big part of that is he's had a good bill of health. And he hasn't had to deal with a lot of big-time injuries ever since getting to Los Angeles, even though he's still been dominant. And he's not fallen out of that top 10 category. But the fact that we are just having a conversation of who's the best player in the NBA right now, and right now it's not LeBron, shows you that he's losing a little speed off his fastball. Now, is the fastball still coming in at 102, 101 miles an hour? No. Is it still hitting 99, 98? Yeah. Does he sometimes show you 101, 102? Absolutely. But I'm really curious next year, can he start to show you 100, 101 once again? And I don't know which way, genuinely do not know which way this is going to go, because I do wonder how much of this year in the postseason, even though he played at still a really damn good level, was him being that exhausted and him looking winded in the fourth quarter was because it took so much energy out of him to even play through a torn tendon in his foot that may need surgery. Like, we don't even know if this definitely needs surgery, but something was wrong with his body. But the last few years, and it's crazy, he's been able to fight most of this off, even with missing some games and a lot of games, his body is starting to catch up with him where it's saying, I don't know how many more years you're going to be able to do this. Now, I don't think LeBron is retiring. I think LeBron's playing next year. I think LeBron is probably going to play 2 more years or maybe just one. Like, I thought about this and I wrestled with this more, Hickey, when after the revision of the quote came out, or he went out there and he kind of changed his tune about one day playing with his son, how that's his dream, but it may not be his son's vision. if Bronny does go one and done at USC, I just wonder if maybe next year is the last year for LeBron James, and then he kind of goes mellow where he passes the torch over to his son, and then when his son gets into the league, which would be 2 years from now, maybe LeBron says, okay, my kid didn't want to play with me, I'm going to be a free agent, and that's when he walks off into the sunset. So I think LeBron, and maybe I'll end up being wrong on this, but if I had to guess right now, LeBron's only playing for another year or two would be my guess.
I'd definitely say no more than two. I would lean towards one next year being the kind of the final year.
Do you like that Bronny thought that I had?
Yeah, and it also paves the way too. I mean, assuming that Bronny is going to be a one and done, it does kind of pave the way of father goes out, son comes in. Look, it's not going to be an easy transition anyway, but it eases it a tiny bit if they're not on the same team and he's not in the league. And now there's no anticipation of LeBron versus his son in the game.
Yeah, imagine that.
Bronny's still going to have that shadow of his dad over him his entire career, no matter what.
No doubt.
But him being out of the league by the time he comes in, I think will help the transition a tiny bit.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, good friend of ours, we love him, Ross Tucker, came out with his top coaching list. He ranked all the coaches in the NFL right now, 1 through 32. I'll give you my top 10 coaches on the other side. And also, I got a few reactions to Ross's list. Not a bad list, not a great list, but I will talk about that list next.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. So I saw our pal, Ross Tucker, released a head coach power ranking today when looking at the NFL coaches entering this season. Now, Hickey, it's always tough to rank NFL coaches because you could look at their legacy and that could be why someone is in the top 10 or why you have them up a few spots and you give them the benefit of the doubt. Or you kind of look at it how it's entering this upcoming season. I do think there's a mix of a little bit of both. But Ross's list, I'm not going to say it's a horrible list. I'm not going to say it's a great list. But it does make you think a lot. And maybe it's telling on how Ross views some of these teams entering this season. So I'll give you his top 10. And then I'll give you some reactions of some guys that aren't in the top 10. And then I'll give you my top 10 coaching list. So number one, he is Andy Reid. Two, he is Bill Belichick. Going into 2023, we know from a legacy standpoint, Belichick's legacy is a lot better than Andy Reid's legacy. But in terms of entering the 2023 season, I got to put Reid at one and Belichick at two, especially Reid coming off a Super Bowl after losing Tyreek Hill. So I'll put Reid one, Belichick two I'm fine with. He has Tomlin at three, Sean Payton four. I love Nick Sirianni, but him being at five right now, I get it. Year one, you know, he makes the playoffs. Year two, he goes on out there and gets to a Super Bowl. But when you look at expectations heading to 2023, yeah, they're right at the top. But from a legacy standpoint, when you mesh those two together, I feel like there's some other guys that deserve the benefit of the doubt before Sirianni. I got to see more from Sirianni, but I'm impressed so far. Shanahan 6, McVay 7. That doesn't make sense to me how you have Shanahan in front of McVay. I think they're very close, but McVay has been to two Super Bowls. Shanahan has only been to one as a head coach, and Sean McVay has won a Super Bowl. Now, I'm sure Ross did say, well, the only thing holding Shanahan back is having a quarterback, and right, he took Jimmy G to a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy got him to an NFC title game, and you look at McVay, Stafford, not 100%, misses games last year, and that team is absolutely dreadful. Daboll in at 8 after 1 year. I know he's coach of the year. I can't put him in the top 10 yet. Pete Carroll in at 9. I think he should be higher up on this list. And I'm actually glad that one name is on this list that I usually see a lot of these other lists and they leave him off. I'm glad that Ross gave Doug Peterson his flowers, putting him in at 10. I think he should be higher up. Doug made the playoffs three times in Philadelphia, made it twice with a backup quarterback, and then when Carson was finally healthy, he got hurt in that playoff game. He won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles and then goes to Jacksonville, where the year prior they're the number one overall pick in the league, and he takes them in his first year to the second round to the playoffs. Hickey, it's weird to me because I feel like around the league, and when you get to these lists, that people usually don't give Doug Peterson his respect. So I'm glad at least, and it's kind of pathetic I have to say this with a bare minimum standard, that Ross Tucker, who's a savvy football mind, gave Doug Peterson a spot in the top 10.
If there's ever any doubt, last year was the year to relinquish that and obviously put Nick extinguish is probably the right word I'm using for any of that doubt about Doug.
Well, I would even say the year after winning the Super Bowl where Carson gets hurt again. And if it wasn't for Alshon Jeffrey dropping a pass and the Saints then scooping it up and intercepting it, he would have been in the NFC title game again. So I thought Doug showed how great of a coach he was in that Super Bowl season, but if people thought it was a one-time wonder, the very next year was very impressive as well. All right, so there's one name that's missing that, and maybe you could maybe even argue two, but I'm going to say there's one name that is definitely egregious that's not in there. John Harbaugh. I don't understand. Do you have his explanation, Hickey? He puts Harbaugh at 11. What did he say about Harbaugh being at 11?
Ross says that he's been the Baltimore Ravens coach since 08, and for good reason. He's racked up playoff berths with now two different quarterbacks, and has a ring from 2012 to top it all off.
That's so it's more so that he only has one ring. Is that what it is?
No, that's not even that. Like. It just sounds like he's more consistent than anything else, but there's no real reason, knock-wise, at least that I could see, that he doesn't have in the top 10.
I don't see how you put Sirianni and Daboll and even Shanahan, just for starters, in front of Harbaugh. That's just me. Also, maybe it's more so how Ross is projecting this season to play on out. I think Mike Vrabel is a heck of a coach. I'll bring up that debate back in a second because then I went through my 10, and he's right on the borderline. And last year I thought he was making his way to being a top five coach in the league, and then they were just dreadful down the stretch. So Vrabel at 13 was a little bit surprising. I think the worst one on this list, actually, is Sean McDermott at 22. Sean McDermott has been in Buffalo for 6 years. That was an organization that hasn't made the playoffs since 1999 before he got there. He's made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. I get it. They were embarrassing last year at home up against Cincinnati in the second round of the playoffs. But Hickey, there's no way that you could tell me with a straight face that there are 21 coaches, and I know you're not a big McDermott guy, but you can't tell me that there are 21 better coaches than Sean McDermott in this league.
What I just don't get with this list is the logic, in the sense that if you want to argue against McDermott that it's more the talent on the roster than his coaching as to why they're consistently in the playoffs every year, okay, fine. But if that's going to be like your basis of knocking McDermott, that should also be then your basis of knocking Nick Sirianni, because even though he has gotten to a Super Bowl, yes, did not win it, but obviously got there where McDermott is not, and the Eagles, you look at that roster, I mean, they are loaded. Like, they are...
They are, but no one thought Jalen Hurts was going to be as good as the way that he played. So I'm imagining that's part of why Ross is hyping up Sirianni, who's a very good coach. I'm not taking anything away from Sirianni, but I think Sirianni being an offensive mind and helping develop Jalen Hurts is what is in Ross's mind makes him more impressive than McDermott, who's a defensive mind, hired the right staff, and made the right moves to bring in a star in Stephon Diggs. But I think that Daboll, in his mind, putting him at 8, gets more of the credit for developing Josh Allen. I'm not saying that's right, but I'm just assuming that's just the way that Ross is going to argue it.
Do you want to hear Sean McDermott's or Ross's explanation of Sean McDermott
being 22? I'm fascinated by that because that's egregious to me. That's ridiculous.
So this is Ross Tucker, Sean McDermott, 22nd ranked head coach in his rankings. He's done a lot of winning and deserves credit for that, but the combination of losing games against far inferior teams in the regular season, which hurts playoff seeding, and then getting outcoached in the postseason is troubling. It seems like it's going to get harder, not easier, for this group of Bills to break through with a Super Bowl berth.
Didn't they beat Kansas City the last 2 years in the regular season? That's why that doesn't make sense to me. And you're going to put Staley in front of him? Mike McCarthy in front of him? Ron Rivera, who I love Ron, but Arthur Smith, Matt LaFleur, who, let's see what he could do without Aaron Rodgers, Dan Campbell, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel. Now we're talking about guys that just finished up their first year in McDaniel and O'Connell. In front of Sean McDermott, that's ridiculous. I'll give you my top 10. And then we'll get into a conversation about this. One heading into 2023 is Andy. Two is Bill Belichick. The job that Pete Carroll did last year puts him in at three. I did put Tomlin at four, Harbaugh at five, Sean Payton at six. I thought four, five, six were the toughest to rank, Tomlin, Harbaugh, and Payton. I was impressed how Tomlin never has a bad year. Harbaugh, you could make the same case, but there's been a few 8 and 8 years as well. Payton, just because he's been out of the sport for a little bit, so that's why I put him at six. It's so tough to figure out where it's going to go with those guys. Seven, I put Doug Peterson. Eight, I put McVay. And nine, I put Kyle Shanahan. For that 10th spot, here's who I consider: Sirianni, Zach Taylor, McDermott, and Vrabel. And I was tossing and turning between McDermott and Vrabel, and that's really when we decide the 10th spot. I'm going to go McDermott right in at 10. But Hickey, trying to pick that final spot, that 10th spot, is really tough. So Ross put in Vrabel at 13. I don't love it, but after going through the list, even though I had different guys in my top 10, it's not incredulous the more and more that I do look back at it. But I will go Andy, Belichick, Pete, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Sean Payton, Doug Peterson, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and then Sean McDermott as my top 10 coaches entering 2023.